Mr. Doug Campbell is requesting authorization to install 6-foot-wide private open pile pier extending 145 feet channelward of mean low water with a 14-by-foot, 16-foot deck, a 15-foot-by-32-foot open-sided boathouse along Lions Creek at 156 Pasture Road in the city of Pocosin. The project is protested by an adjacent property owner and Oyster Ground leaseholder. Project location is in the city of Pocosin. It's located on the western side of Chesapeake Bay, City of Hampton. Here, just for your reference. Project area is within the red circle. Again, the project area is located within the red circle. This is the Pocosin River emptying out to Chesapeake Bay. This is Lions Creek here, and the project location is approximately here. This is an aerial view of Mr. Campbell's property here, with the yellow line approximating where the pier location would be. And this is the plan view drawing for the proposed pier. I've got a blow-up and a larger scale drawing here. Essentially what we have is Mr. Campbell's property located here with the riparian area out here. The area in red you see outlined is the Oyster Ground leaseholders. And the amber color you see here, or yellow color you see here, is the riparian line demarcating Mr. Campbell's riparian area from Mr. Appelt, who's also protesting the project. Looking a little closer at the pier, we see we have a 6-foot-wide pier that traverses the oyster lease. And here's the 14-foot-by-16-foot L-head and 15-foot-by-32-foot open-sided boathouse, both of which are channelward of the oyster lease protestant's lease ground. Again, we can see with the yellow line here that both of these structures are, that the entire structure is located outside of Mr. Appelt's riparian area. Here's a cross-section of the proposed boathouse, 15 feet wide, as you can see here. The bottom of the roof structure, the eaves, will be 8 feet above the decking. At the top of the roof, approximately 12 feet above the decking and 17 feet above mean high water. Pitch of the roof is also proposed to be 2-to-1. Ground shot. Looking to the north from the proposed location of the pier, you can see we have a fairly wide fringe marsh. And this is looking at the proposed alignment of the pier. The two stakes I have out highlighted here in yellow show the approximate location of the pier. The fence line you see here is the approximate property line between Mr. Campbell and Mr. Appelt, who's protesting the project. This is a closer look at the alignment, and what I want to really show you here is the presence of these floats that you see here. And these are marking on-cage oyster aquaculture that Mr. Brown, the oyster leaseholder, is currently operating. So the project, again is protested by Mr. Appelt, the adjacent property owner, located here just to the south. I've highlighted the riparian apportionment that Mr. Campbell has received for his riparian area. And Mr. Appelt has listed three major concerns with the project, the first being the length of the pier. Currently, the pier is proposed to extend out to the established line navigation by the court apportionment, which is the -2-foot mean low water contour. Second concern Mr. Appelt had was the fact that the pier could be in his riparian area, but according to the court apportionment, the pier is located completely within Mr. Campbell's riparian area. Mr. Appelt's third major concern was the size of the boathouse, 15 feet by 32 feet. The staff feels that this is an appropriate size for Mr. Campbell's pier boat that he owns at this time, and is still within the 700 square feet that would have been allowed under the exemption if it had not been protested.
What is the size of the boat?
It's a 22 and a half foot boat.
Thanks.
This is an aerial view again. I'm just trying to give you a kind of a line of sight that Mr. Appelt has looking out from his window from his house through the approximate location of the pier. So you can see that the pier would be in his line of sight, so there would be some impact to his view shed. The other protestant in the project is the holder of this lease that you see outlined in red. And I've again depicted the approximate location of the pier. You can see the completely transverse is his oyster lease, and it extends into the oyster lease offshore. The oyster lease holder out here has not protested the project. And as far as I can tell, it's not productive ground. Um, 28.2-1205 states piers over 100 feet in length for mean low water and transversing productive oyster lease requires a permit from this agency. And that permit may reasonably describe the design and location of the pier to minimize impacts to that oyster ground. Again, we can see that right now what we have is a 6-foot wide pier transversing the oyster lease of Mr. Brown. In consultation with council, we felt that a 6-foot wide main stem pier was the only thing we could allow transversing that oyster lease. And based on the drawings we have before us, that's the only thing that will be impacting Mr. Brown's oyster lease is a 6-foot wide main stem pier. This is just a drawing to show you the oyster lease and any impact it may have had in regards to oyster condemnation. This is from February 2014. As we can see, the area is not condemned at this time. However, with this green line you see here in 2011, the southern half of this oyster lease was condemned for sanitation purposes. Mr. Brown, in an attempt to minimize the impacts to his oyster ground, requested that the pier be realigned to the north to parallel a clear access zone that was established in the Accord Apportionment. This clear access zone is to allow the adjacent property owner to the north, Mr. Lockwood, access into his cove where his house is located here. And again, this is all delineated in the riparian apportionment that you see here. Here's the clear access zone here, allowing Mr. Campbell access, allowing Mr. Lockwood access to his property here. The pier right now follows the southern portion of the riparian apportionment and ends up basically at the channelward end. There's not much room for him to move the channelward end of that pier, so the oyster lease holder is asking that the pier be realigned to the north again. In talking to Mr. Campbell about this realignment, he felt that because of the court apportionment, that the pier is fixed in its location. In order to realign the pier, he would have to get another court apportionment showing where the pier location is. And I believe Mr. Eason, who is representing Mr. Campbell, can probably speak to that fact a little bit better than that. I talked to Mr. Lockwood about this realignment as well, and he's unwilling to accept the realignment of that pier to the north because he wants to make sure that his clear access zone is navigable at all times. Mr. Lockwood, that is the northern APO.
He's here also? I'm sorry.
I don't think he's here today. Okay. But we do have a letter from him, and that's in your packages today. And now I'll read the staff summary recommendation for the record. In 1998, the General Assembly amended 28.2-1203A5 of the Code of Virginia to provide statutory authorization for the construction of open-sided boathouses measuring 700 square feet or less and designed to cover a single boat at a private non-commercial pier, provided the boathouse was not objected to by the adjoining property owner and was allowed by local ordinances. Since the City of Pecosin does not restrict the construction of boathouses, had the adjacent property owner not objected to this project, the proposed 480-square-foot boathouse would have qualified for the statutory exemption. Staff believes the boathouse is appropriately sized for the vessel Mr. Campbell owns and that the open-sided structure will only minimally add to the visual obstruction of the pier. Additionally, the pier is located within the riparian area defined by the circuit court, and the channelward end of the pier extends to the established navigation line navigation, which would allow the pier to qualify for the statutory exemption for private piers as defined by 28.2-1203A5 of the Virginia Code if it was not protested by the oyster ground holder. Pursuant to 28.2-1205D of the Code of Virginia, a permit is required and shall be issued by the Commission for placement of any private pier measuring 100 feet or more in length from the mean low water mark, which is used for non-commercial purposes by an owner of the riparian land in the waters opposite the land, and that traverses commercially productive leased oyster or clam grounds as defined in 28.2-630, provided that the pier does not extend beyond the navigation line established by the Commission or by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The permit may reasonably prescribe the design and location of the pier for the sole purpose of minimizing the adverse impact on such oyster or clam ground or the harvesting or propagation of oysters or clams therefrom. Based on advice from our legal counsel with the Office of Attorney General, a permit can only be granted for the private pier, the dimensions of which are defined by code. It does not allow for the issuance of a permit for any other structure associated with the pier, including covered lift, if the leaseholder protests the project. Mr. Brown has submitted DMRC mandatory harvest report showing commercial harvest from the private lease in question. Additionally, Mr. Brown has submitted an alternate plan for the applicant that he feels would minimize the pier's impact to his oyster lease. Staff has reviewed Mr. Campbell's plan drawings and riparian apportionment as well as Mr. Brown's alternate proposal and believes the dimensions of the pier, as proposed by the applicant, represent the least amount of necessary structure to allow the applicant to reach and utilize navigable water depths. Staff is also aware that realigning the pier to the north could violate the riparian apportionment between Mr. Campbell and Mr. Lockwood. Section 28.2-618 of the Code of Virginia states that oyster planting ground is leased subject to riparian rights. In accordance with 28.2-630 of the Code of Virginia, any landowner who wishes to construct a wharf in front of their property and who is not a leasee or riparian holder of the suitable bottom shall give the leasee of the state-owned bottom 12 months' notice of their intent. If, however, the Commission finds the proposed structure will not adversely affect commercial productive oyster or clam grounds, defined as those which can be demonstrated to have suitable substrate for shellfish production, evidence of commercial shellfish production in the last 3 years, and the 12-month notice and waiting period shall not apply. It appears to staff that the oyster planting ground is commercially productive and that the proposed structure will have an adverse effect on the utilization of the oyster lease. Additionally, the applicant has notified the oyster leaseholder by letter dated June 19, 2013, of their intent to construct the aforementioned private pier, which in accordance with 28.2-630 would allow Mr. Campbell to start pier construction on June 19, 2014. Accordingly, after evaluating the merits of the project, or those in opposition to the project, and considering all factors contained in 28.2-630 and 28.2-1205 of the Code of Virginia, and since there appears to be no practical alternate location for the pier and the deck end and covered lift are not protested by the leaseholder over which they extend, staff recommends approval of the project as proposed. I'll be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any questions from the Commission? Mr. Plumlee.
What are the depths, the water depths, to the north? Are they dramatically deeper? Is it pretty much the same?
Pretty much the same, uniform. I can try and blow this up for you a little bit so you can see the apportionment actually has water depths on it. So here's the 2-foot line of navigability. We're basically decreasing depth up to mean low water. So we have 2 here, about 1.5 here. It's a little hard to see, but 1.1, 0.8 up to mean low water, which is 0.0.
Where were the cages that you were showing us?
The cages are located in this area to the south of the clear access zone, and a few, I think, were located just to the north of the clear access zone. The lease does extend just north of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Erskine.
So, Mike, Mr. Brown, the leaseholder, is suggesting that the pier would be relocated further north, therefore impeding some of the access channel. Is that correct?
Yes. So he's requesting that it be realigned to this side, mm-hmm. further to the north. Right now, it's proposed to come out like this. Mm-hmm. So he's asking basically to kick it over here, then dog-leg it a little harder to parallel the clear access.
And
I'll follow up.
the clear access zone labeled on that diagram currently has cages?
No, it does not have cages in the clear access.
It does not, okay. And does he have the ability to move further upstream with these cages?
He has a little sliver of ground just to the north here.
Okay.
And then in the majority of his oyster leases again to the south.
Do you know if he... I'm sorry.
Ms. Erskine.
Do you know if he has a general permit or is he operating under a different regulation with these cages?
He has a lease.
He does.
From DMRC to operate.
Okay. Thank you.
I do have a question here. This was an application made in 2011.
Yes, sir.
We're here in 2014. Why? What was the delay?
Initially he actually came to the commission before that. But because of the riparian issues, he was asked to get a court apportionment, which took several years to do. In 2011, after he got the apportionment, he came back to us again. The initial problem with the application that we identified was the court apportionment did not delineate the southern portion of the riparian area. It only delineated the north between him and Mr. Lockwood because that was the initial issue at hand, was the riparian area between him and Mr. Lockwood to establish this clear access zone. At that point, I asked the applicant to amend the riparian apportionment amended so that it's defined as the whole apportionment area. And I have both of those orders in your packets today.
Do you know when the first application was made for this pier?
Not off the top of my head. That was before I...
Okay.
2006, I believe, sir. Okay. Predated my...
Any other questions from the commission? The applicant represented or here?
My name is Carl Eason. I'm an attorney with Walcott Rivers Gates, and I'm here on behalf of Campbell's. I first of all appreciate staff. They work hard, diligently, and it's been a long road. The litigation on the riparian rights started in 06. Most residential piers don't typically take that long. And I think that staff has given you a very full and complete rendition of the issues before you. I'd like to address only a couple of things if I could. First of all, the proposed realignment, if you look at it, takes the pier head itself and it puts it back into the oyster ground. What you have before you proposed by Mr. Campbell with the suggestion of staff was to extend that pier out, and it's not 145 feet, it's 160 feet, and that takes the T-head and the boathouse completely out of the oyster area. Secondly, when we went and got the riparian rights apportionment, if you look at the court order, it has the proposed pier on there. An apportionment is an apportionment, of course, of the bottom land, the rights of use, not of ownership. That's VMRC still has jurisdiction. But the question becomes, once that proposed pier was on that court order and the court affixed its seal to it, 21 days elapses, it becomes final and non-appealable. 30 days, it's over. So it can't be amended. It's in stone. So frankly, I think that the original proposal, which had the jet ski dock on the side and maybe the pier located in that riparian area as opposed to what's on that court order, is impermissible. Secondly, to minimize the impact, one stem, and only a straight stem, crosses the oyster ground. It doesn't have the jet skis, doesn't have the boathouse like the earlier proposal. So again, I think that was a very wise and prudent suggestion of staff to make that alternative change. Anybody who has ever lived on the water and has a neighbor knows that view sheds and aesthetics are important to them. We're not minimizing those rights. We think, however, we've tried to take the project and do the minimal amount necessary in order to achieve a residential non-commercial pier. Line of navigability is nothing magic in the law. Your counsel will tell you that you can read the code from one side to the other. It's never going to tell you it's magically 3 feet, 5 feet, 8 feet. What is it? Courts traditionally, and this was Robert Kennedy was a hydrographic surveyor on this. Mr. Kennedy died in a fatal boating accident and is no longer with us, but he was an expert in his field. And the court adopted that 2 foot line of navigability. Anything less really wouldn't give you any use for a 22.5 foot boat. It has current 2014 registration on it, Virginia Hull 5054. That's in your package as well. So having said all that, I yield and I will be responsive to any questions you might have of me.
Any questions from the commission? This is a public hearing. Is anyone wishing to speak in favor of this project? Anyone opposed? Come on forward. Come on forward. Please state your name.
Yes, sir. I'm the landowner, Harvey Brown.
Mr. Brown.
Yes.
Perfect.
I will speak up. To do this.
Could you speak up a little bit and into the microphone?
Yes, that's
right. Will you please raise your right hand here? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Yes, sir. I'm a full-time waterman. I put in for this oyster agriculture doing the crab disaster program they had going. And I put in for the oyster ground. I had to, pay to get it run through the newspaper and everything. Everything cleared was fine. My biggest concern is that polluted line shifts all the time. And when it drops down below to that point, it's not as big a piece of ground as it looks like. When that don't give me a lot of clean bottom to harvest oysters. And the way the dock is, it's kind of like cutting it in two. That's the deepest part of the ground. Where the dock, he wants to put the dock. And by putting that pier across there, it's just breaking it up so bad that I got to try to work cages in between that and the channel, Lockwood's channel. You know, what we were proposing is that he come up against there, would benefit him because it's deeper water, and then our ground wouldn't be cut up. And, you know, my biggest problem is it's not a very, as far as clean bottom to work my cages. If that line shifts back, which it may do, that's just, you know, I don't have much room to work my cages. And, that's my biggest concern on it. It would just, it's more or less cutting the deepest part right in two. The way the dock's going across there, we're only talking, what, about 30 feet? That we got to take a boat and go all the way around and then work the channel, whereas if he put the dock closer to the channel, then he's out of our way, and plus he's got access to deeper water because of the channel that goes in there for his boats.
Mr. Plumlee.
How far did you propose that he move it to the north?
As far as the dock going past the ground, that's fine. I mean, because that's where the deeper, where our oyster ground line is, that's where the deep water is as far as getting a boat in and out. And I'm not against the man building a dock. If I lived on the water, I'd want a dock too. I'm just, my problem is over two-thirds of my ground is condemned. And I just got that little strip that I got to work, you know, to work my cages. And if it,
I'm not getting a good visual in my mind about what you're saying. Is there a better photograph to show the leased area or something that we could? I don't really understand what he's.
Mr. Brown, could
you can stay up there. I didn't know if there was a better slide for us to look at.
Is this helping at all in terms of here's his lease ground here in red. Here's the clear access zone. Proposed alignment now. Proposing to move it up.
Where the arrow is in between there, that's more or less, that's going to cut my ground in two. I'm going to have to go all the way around the head of the dock to try to work cages in between that and the channel. If the pier was shifted closer to the channel, then he would be out of my way, and then I would have that room for my cages. And I mean, that's going to be lost bottom because I'm going to have to go all the way around the dock to try to fish cages in between the channel and his dock. And then if it's boats at that dock, all the stirring up mud and everything, it's lost bottom for me.
Mr. Hall?
Ms. Haney.
Where on that chart is the area for the condemned ground?
The current condemned area is south down to here. It has been condemned all the way up to here.
That was the last one.
The last condemned. 2011 was condemned. 2014, now the condemned area is down here.
That was a bacteria condemnation?
So. Okay. Yes, it is. It must be done by CDH.
One second. If you're going to testify, please come forward here and I'll swear you in. Any other questions? Mr. Erskine.
Mr. Brown, it seems here you have leased from the state 3.97 acres total in that lease. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. 3.97.
Okay. Where the 2011 condemnation line was at that time, how much ground did that give you to work in 2011?
Sir, I don't know. This is my going on my fourth year doing this. Like I said, I got picked to do the oyster agriculture because of the crab disaster, because I'm a full-time waterman. And the state gave me like 50 cages and to do the seed, and I had a contract. After that was up, I had the option of either selling my cages or expand my operation. And I chose to expand it. And with my brother-in-law here, we're in partners with it.
Mr. Erskine.
Yes, sir.
I approximated the area.
Okay.
The GIS is about 1.25 acres. Yes, it was north of the old condemnation line in 2011.
And just to be clear, the 3.97 acres currently is approved and open.
Maybe half.
No, currently.
The line is now. I'm only using from that point.
It's all open now.
Oh,
yeah.
All of our ground?
Yeah, all our ground is open.
Yeah, right now it is open. Yes, sir. That's correct.
And is it all suitable?
Yes, sir.
At this time. But my concern is it only got that way, what, a year ago? I said a year ago, probably, it's been about a year since they opened it all up. Before, when I leased the grain, two-thirds of the grain was condemned. So this area where I have the cages was the clean area.
Okay. And would you like to testify as well?
Yes. When's Mr. Brown?
Any other questions, Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Ms. Erskine.
How many cages do you currently have in your operation?
How many cages we got, Bob?
Almost 900.
900.
Thank you.
And over 1,000 back.
Okay. Well, let me swear you in here.
Yes, sir.
Do you swear to tell the truth? The testimony today that you give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
To help me, God.
Please state your name.
My name is George Baker. I live at 89 Browns Neck Road. Actually, I live, you see where the T is in that canal, the man-made canal on Browns Neck Road? That's where I live. I live on the water. And Mr. Campbell, I do not want to deny Mr. Campbell any access to the water. I have access to water. That has never been our proposal. Me and Mr. Brown was ever denying Mr. Brown access. All we were asking Mr. Campbell was just to litigate how much damage that he would do to our ground. I also wanted to make sure Mr. Campbell understands that, from my understanding, is we're allowed to put cages almost this close to his dock. If you move, Mr. Johnson, can we change slides? I'm the one who drew up the drawing. May I approach the sign?
There's a pointer or something in there.
Well, if you'll see the access zone where it says clear access, that is for Mr. Lockwood's access to his cove. Okay, thank you. If you see, well, maybe I'll turn it on. Well, if you'll see where, it doesn't work. Dead. So my plan was to align it so it was parallel. What it's going to do is give Mr. Campbell more benefit because we were going to basically say, Mr. Campbell, anything to the north side of your dock, you know, dock all the boats, anybody comes and visits, you know, we're going to stay out of that section that's still our ground. We're going to stay out. We're going to give you access. Mr. Lockwood would have his full access. Mr. Campbell would have access all down the north, linear north side of his dock. We would stay on the south side of the dock. And then everybody would be fine. So basically, instead of baking that ground into three sections, it would be in two sections. We have that very small top north section, and then we have everything south of his dock. So that was the reason for kicking it. And the reason why my drawing is different is because this was of the original proposal. He has now changed his proposal and moved the dock onto the other side, the T-head, the end of it. And he's extended it out further. So that's why that drawing looks a little different. Again, I want Mr. Campbell to have his dock. I do. Me and Mr. Brown do. We just want to try to litigate the amount of damages to our business. You know, we started out with 40 cages 4 years ago. Now we're right at 900 cages. Getting ready to purchase another 250 cages. We started out 40,000 seed. We have purchased over 1 million seed. We've done over $75,000 worth of gross sales in 1 year. So this is not just a little project here and there. It's just a couple of cages. This is going to be a serious operation. You know, we're working at this at least harvesting 6 to 7 months out of a year. And the ground and the area of that is very productive because it's very hard, sandy bottom. As we produce back to the west, it gets narrow and tees down. And again, that line has crossed, and that line moves. Every year they reevaluate oyster ground. So it can be changed. It can move back. It can move back forward.
Mr. Plumlee.
How far away from that clear access zone is the proposed pier today? I mean, what's before us?
This is the direction. Screen to the one he's showing his drawing, Mr. Campbell's drawing.
So here's the alignment proposed today. It's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 feet right now. this from the first point away along the water.
From about this access to here is about 50 feet. We're just asking for him to kick this over and keep and just make this contour. Instead of having one piece of ground, two pieces of ground, and then another piece of ground, we want to bring it over so that it gives us more than one piece. That's all. That's basically the next one. It gives him more access so that when he comes and goes, he can come into that access zone that, Mr. Lockwood has too. Not impeding on his. He's going to make sure that his dock is much further to the west. But if he does put a boat, a friend comes over and ties a boat, he's still not blocking Mr. Lockwood's access. So we want to give up more of our ground.
Ms. Erskine.
I have a question, Mr. Baker. With that shift that you're proposing to move to the north, it gains maybe 50 feet. Is that correct? How many cages of the 900 would that allow you to grow? I mean, I commend you for doing oyster aquaculture, certainly, but it seems like a rather small area, 50 feet, that you would be able to then place cages.
You see this tabletop right here?
Mm-hmm.
Not quite 2 foot, it's about 3 foot.
Mm-hmm.
That's 500 oysters. That's a cage.
Mm-hmm. But if there's an acre, if there's 3.97 acres, and you move to the south, it's still suitable oyster ground,
It's extremely shallow. Low tide, and then in the wintertime when the tide falls out and we have these cold, I will lose a lot of my oysters because they will stay out of the water too long and will freeze. That is the deepest end of our ground. That is the best productive end of our ground. By far. This section from where Mr. Apel's line goes, maybe just right in here, from here to here.
Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Plumlee.
Mr. Baker, you're a partner with Mr.
Yes.
Brown, is that right? So this
partner.
Is like a...
My brother-in-law.
Okay, so it's like a...
It's a partner.
Company running the,
yes.
The oystering? Okay.
Yes, it is, sir.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Commissioner.
Yes, Mr. Kugel.
Just a quick question of Mr. Brown is the leaseholder.
Yes, Mr. Brown is the leaseholder.
Not the partnership, not you.
Excuse me?
Not the partnership, not you.
No.
I just want to make sure that's clear on the record.
It's very true.
Okay. Doesn't impugn your testimony at all. I just wanted to make sure the record was clear about the ownership.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you.
Mr. Eason, I suggest you, I suspect you might have a bit of time to rebut.
I think you have one other opponent. I think Mr. Pelt is here.
Oh, terrific. Yes, I did see him in the back. Yes, sir. Please come forward.
Trying to listen.
You swear that the testimony you will give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please proceed. State your name for the record.
My name is Walter Apel. I live at 154 Pasture Road, right next door to Mr. Campbell. And some of the lines you see up there are extensions of property lines. I don't want to testify for Mr. Brown, but I would worry about the oil and gas and diesel fuel and bilge pump and everything else coming into my oyster grounds. But I'm here for another reason, and that is both economic and aesthetic. I moved into this house in 1978. When I came in, it was pretty clear across the front. And one of the things that, of course, Mike didn't show, which I'm sorry he didn't, is a picture of what the waterfront looks like from my house. It's changed over the years. I came here today because I learned what happens if I'm quiet and don't speak up. The previous owner before Mr. Campbell dredged out that channel they were talking about from Mr. Lockwood, pumped all the sand up on the shore, and according to his permit, he was supposed to remove it. It's never been removed. No one ever followed up on it. It's still there. Now we've got 20-foot pine trees growing on it, so it used to be a nice, clear, open waterfront. Is now covered up with pine tree. My view of the Chesapeake Bay went away. So I'm worried about views disappearing over a period of time. The concern I have centers around, I guess, the same thing Mr. Brown does, is how this pier takes a jog to the south. You know, it doesn't come off the shore on a perpendicular plane. It comes off on an angle. He's got one of the smallest lots in the
in the area there, and it would be nice if it came out on a perpendicular, but it doesn't. It comes out at an angle, about a 15 to 20 degree angle. And as it does, it comes and cuts right across the property line in view and sits out right in front of my house. And consequently, when you start talking about why it appears that way or why it does that, no one's ever given me a good reason as to why the property line was extended and then took a dog leg to the south to allow him to move the pier further down and to build the boathouse and his deck on the south side of that pier rather than on the north side. Mr. Brown's solution of putting it on the north side and moving it a little further north would help me quite a bit if you were able to do that. I don't know why that dog leg's there. It doesn't make any sense to me. Mr. Lockwood and I fought the apportionment in court, and we ran out of money at the $20,000 level and decided it wasn't worthwhile to continue to push on it. We'd have to come to you folks to see if we couldn't get some kind of mitigation or justice. And, of course, $20,000 went away. Now that dog leg apparently is locked in. My concern, of course, is that not only does it come to the south, I wish I had a color printer. When Mike called me last evening and told me that we were having a hearing today, and can I introduce these? I wish I had a color printer. I don't know that you've done that, have you, Mike?
We can project it out.
Well, this is not a very good picture. Hello. Mike has some good photographs from on high looking down, but if you saw the deck that he had, the pier that he had was a straight line. He didn't have a hammerhead on there that's down at the far end that shows where the dock extends to the south and also where the building is going to be built. Call it a boat shed, but when you get to be 500 square feet, 15 feet high, that's a house out in the middle of the creek. And that's what I'm going to be looking at. Now, best I can tell right here, well, you've got a...
Mr. Appel, we have the pointer. The pointer does work. So if you stand by the microphone, we need to have this on tape.
All right. I got one of these. Near as I can tell, this is a piling that's here where we used to tie boats, and this is where the depth is. Near as I can tell, the house that he's going to build is going to be right in this area right here. So it very definitely is going to be a house out in the middle of the creek. And 15 feet high, 33 feet long for a 23-foot boat. I have no objection to the pier if it were moved further north. I have no objection to the hammerhead he's got there, but I sure wish it was pointed in the north direction rather than the south direction. Where it is right now, I do have a problem with the hammerhead and the building that he looks to build for the boat dock. Don't see any rationale for it, and what Mr. Brown's going through and what I'm going through, it's an awful lot of pain to put people through when a marina is a mile and a half away. And right across that open water, because you go right over here, and you go right down the other side of this property, and then there's the river that goes over the Coastal Marina, which is back over behind those trees. So it's really close, and have it parked outside, I'm not sure it makes any sense to me. So I would like to see it at least move further north. I would hope that the rationale for the building would go away and that he can tie it up to the side of the pier and after it's moved further north. So that's my discussion. It's $1 million view, and I had a lot of people tell me that. And we enjoy sitting there watching the sun come up over the Chesapeake Bay. But the building out there in the middle of the creek is going to mitigate that a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Appel.
All right.
Any questions from the commission? All right. Hearing none, is there anyone else who wishes to testify either in favor or against this proposal? Hearing none, the matter is before the commission. Oh, Mr. Easton, yes, you got a chance to rebut. My apologies.
That's quite all right. I'll be brief on the rebuttal. On October the 9th of 2012, the circuit court entered an order, and the order is signed by counsel, and it says, we ask for this. And when we go to court and we seek an apportionment, and then we don't object to that order or take exception to it, it becomes a final order, and it's binding upon the parties. And you heard Mr. Appelt get up here today and say, notwithstanding the fact that the circuit court's already adjudicated this case, I hope you all would sit and second-guess that circuit court judge. I don't think that we have the jurisdiction to do that. He was a party to it. They fought it, and it stands what it is. The pier in its current alignment is exactly what you see on that court order. It wasn't when this started, but it has been since I got involved in the case, because I think that's binding upon the parties. Okay, the second thing we need to look at is, let's talk about Mr. Brown's concerns in the realignment and Mr. Apelt's as far as that the boathouse itself. If you see, it comes out to the apex, the channel word, where it says a clear access zone. That can't move, all right? And even if it did move, it wouldn't move more than 15 feet one way or the other. Mr. Brown is suggesting go back at the mean low water and parallel it, which means moving the stem over approximately 43 feet. But you still have a 5-foot cut through the oyster ground. Whether we have it here or whether we have it here, it's still a minimal impact, and it's a direct cut going through it. So I think we're bound by that court order. I do hear the concerns that are being raised, but I think that what the applicant has done has minimized the concerns to the greatest extent possible. From an aesthetic point of view, realigning the stem doesn't going to change, it isn't going to change the location of that boathouse. So if it's objectionable to have a boathouse in your view shed, then it's going to be, regardless of what happens, if, as long as that's allowed and it's within the statutory 700 square feet, that's not going to change that issue. So having said that, I think that the aesthetic concerns are going to have to give way to the fact that it's been litigated, and I think it's raised judicata as to the parties before you today, and I hope that the application, as it's been amended with the cooperation of staff, is approved by this commission. Do you have any questions?
Mr. Quinlan.
Mr. Easton, I was hoping to see where in the order and the agreement attached the language that prohibits this relocation that we're discussing. I just want to make sure I put my hands on. I see where they are, the Lockwoods are prohibited from putting a pier in that clear access zone, but I don't. I'm trying to see the language prohibiting the Campbells.
Right. Mr. Plumlee, what happens is it says the riparian area is attached as Exhibit A attached here to the order. And there is an Exhibit A attached to the order. And that's exactly, I don't know if you have that. There was an order, then there was amended.
Is this the 913?
The original order didn't have the closure line. The southern apportionment area closed in. When they went back to the circuit court of York and Pocosin, they then got the apportionment line to the south of that. But the key becomes that court order had attached to it Mr. Kennedy's hydrographic survey and apportionment as Exhibit A. And Exhibit A, though it didn't have to, it did depict the proposed pier. So the parties had that issue before the court when they're arguing over the apportionment. Somewhere on my tombstone, I hope someone puts the phrase, property lines extended are not riparian lines. You know, when you go to court, you seek that equitable apportionment. And so that's why it takes this mysterious dogleg. And if you spent $20,000 in court, I would hope you would at least understand that basic premise, because it's an important one when we start talking about the rights of use. But circuit court tells us, not the commission with due respect, what the riparian rights are. And we're within that area.
Question, Commissioner?
Yeah, please.
Mr. Reese, maybe you can help me with something here. Okay, the circuit court certainly has jurisdiction to apportion riparian rights, but are you saying that the circuit court has also determined and bound the commission by describing the use of that bottom land as well?
I'm saying it subscribes to the parties in their opposition to it. I don't think that the circuit court is going to tell VMRC whether you can have a pier, what the shape of it is, what the configuration of it is. I don't think it mandates that VMRC, you're not a party to that litigation, you're not bound by it. But the parties that came before the court said, we agree to this exhibit, and what is on the exhibit is an apportionment and a proposed pier. So I think that's the judicial estoppel that runs against the parties before you today, but not counsel as to the rights of the commission. You can tell me.
I just wanted to hear your, Mr. Commissioner, may I just have some leave?
Please.
Thank you. I just wanted to hear your understanding of that. I mean, it's counsel to the commission's understanding that that's effectively correct, and the court the circuit courts are certainly clearly within their jurisdiction to apportion the riparian rights, and you are correct in that it does not bind the commission in permitting or limiting the commission's ability to permit what's going on here. I would think that rather than stopping any kind of permit conditions before the commission could issue those permit conditions. But I would submit that the commission is not stopped from.
I concur. The court doesn't tell you what to do as far as the regulation,
okay.
Just like you don't tell the court where an apportioned area is.
But your position is that if you don't approve it in the current location as shown on the exhibit, you're throwing us back into the courtroom,
mm-hmm.
potentially between the parties to argue where it should be located.
Case I'd had, even
and that's what I'm struggling to find in the agreement itself where they say, in accordance with that exhibit, this is the location of the pier. That's what these parties agreed to. Does it say that in this order?
It does not say it. It says the apportionment is as per the attached Exhibit A. The words are not there.
The apportionment is, but the location of the pier is what we're debating today.
The depiction is there. And remember, an apportionment is your right of use, not ownership, but right of use. So the circuit court said, what are we going to use this for? There's your riparian area, and the right of use is that proposed pier. So I think that's exactly what the parties brought to the circuit court when they went and achieved that order. Any further questions of the commission? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Eason. Always a pleasure to see you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. We've heard your testimony here. The matter is now before the commission.
Well, I think... this site is being oystered rather well, this leased area. This litigation has gone on for a number of years. I'm not wanting to throw people back into the full mode of litigation. I'm not sure if I'm in full agreement with Mr. Eason, but I don't understand this case as well as he does. I'm really not sure by moving it to the north we're going to make it that much less intrusive upon the oystering operation. And so for that reason, I would go... And support a motion. I would make a motion for the recommendations as put forward by staff on this.
We have a motion to approve staff recommendation. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second by Dr. Neal. We have some discussion on this. All right. Yeah, Mr. Erskine.
I appreciate, the motion, certainly, and I think we've heard a lot of good testimony. I appreciate that you have the right to wharf out and that there's an active and productive lease. There's a concern over view shed and those kind of issues. And I guess what I'm struggling with is that there's nearly 4 acres of oyster ground there, and I understand there's depth concerns, shallow and deeper water. But if you... have cages on either side of this proposed pier, it seems that you still would be able, for the majority of your lease, to be able to work that area and get to deeper water. I understand you'd have to maybe go around a proposed pier. So I would agree. I think we're kind of moving in the right direction. That's a limited amount of area that you would lose on a productive lease, but there is the right to wharf out, and you have up to 12 months, I believe, to move structures to an appropriate area. So that gives reasonable leeway to move these cages if necessary. So I would agree. I think we're moving in a pretty good direction.
Any other discussion? Well, we have a motion to approve staff recommendation and the second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much.